Session number 789.
Mr. A.W. Phillips, Reel 3. You were just telling me, Mr. Phillips, about how you were going up to Kaji Fort.
Oh, yes, when we finished up very tired, and we were under this, the only tree I think we saw that day. There was about 20 of us there, and we managed to get to scramble along up to Kurji Fort, which was about a quarter of a mile away. And we were lucky in the fact that the battalion had built the wall, so we didn't have that that chore to do. We were just able to get over the wall and lay down to go to sleep.
Can you tell me about this building of walls every night whilst you're on the frontier?
Oh, that had to be done. It was done every night for our protection because before we had any food. It was really hard work, but everybody set to, and it was all the loose stones on that, you know, that were built up. Well, you've seen the photograph there. And it had to be done every night until we got to our base camp at Jandola, which was permanent. But otherwise, each night we had this wall to build.
After the day's march?
After the day's march and fighting. Oh, yes. Yeah.
How far did you usually march in a day?
Oh, I couldn't say, because we were held up sometimes with the enemy, and the scrambling we had to do, you just couldn't judge the distance, you know. It's
So, but anyway, you were very tired, obviously, yeah, at the end of a day's march.
Yeah, yeah.
What did the troops think to having to build this wall?
It's a funny thing. I never heard any grumbling. It was just the fact that it had got to be done if you wanted to be in the land of the living the next morning.
Yes.
That was the idea.
How long did it take to build the wall?
Well, a very short time, because everybody set to, you know, and it didn't take really long. Perhaps a couple of hours. And then you had some food if there was any. But as I say, talking about food, they used to issue us a big tin of bully beef between three men. Well, of course, somebody had to carry it. So we used to toss up as to who should have it. And the fellow that carried it, when we met him in the evening, he hadn't got it. He said it was so heavy he'd thrown it away. So we got no food. It was terrible. So we had to go to the cook and see if we could get anything from him. Oh, it was a lark.
And did the cook give you stuff?
If he got any. But he usually hadn't got any. We had to fall back on army biscuits and water. But those army biscuits were really good stuff. They were really very good. I don't know if they still use them or not.
Sweet biscuits, were they?
No, they were hard biscuits. You broke them up and put them in your mouth and take some water with them. It was really a meal in itself. Absolutely.
Presumably you were so short of food because the army was trying to travel as light as possible.
That was evidently the trouble, yes, but we had an Indian contractor, and he followed up the troops and brought up what he could, you know, in the way of food and all that sort of stuff. And I went to him one evening and found that he'd got some sardines. So I thought to myself, oh, well, I have a feed of sardines. So I bought this tin, and I really enjoyed those sardines. But my stomach wouldn't take it. It all came back, so it was money wasted. I mean, just show the state you're getting, you know, on a fare like that. It was really, really amazing.
Did you ever buy anything else from him?
I bought a pair of very dark glasses because it was so bright, and there was no greenery to relieve the strain on the eyes. And I got these glasses. Oh, they were beautiful, they were lovely up there, but I tried them when I got home, as you know, I could hardly see through them. It just shows the strength of the sun in these countries, you know.
What type of terrain were you going over whilst you were going up that valley? What was the ground like?
Oh, there was nothing else but boulders and stones. There was no path of any sort. None at all. It was really... You've got to look where you put your foot every time you step forward. It wasn't so bad when we got up onto the hillside. And there's a bit of grass and that up there, you know. But up the riverbed itself, it was really, really terrible. And then, of course, one day we lost the river completely.
How did that come about?
Well, it was one evening and the river just dried up. And there was nothing but a stream of mud. And, of course, we hadn't got any water in our bottles, and the animals wasn't carrying any water because we hadn't needed to carry water. I mean, we'd been walking through it all day long. And this just disappeared. And we had no food that night. We had no bully beef stew or anything. Just biscuits and water again. And the next morning it was still not there. So we started off, and we're fighting our way up again, captured these hills and whatnot. And we went all day with no water. And one fellow said, well, he said, I know where there is some. He said, I'll take a couple of mules out and see if I can get it. He knew there was a well there somewhere. But as I say, he came back minus the mules and no water, because he'd been fired on before he got there. But anyhow, we carried on, and at the end of the day, we came on this river. It was dammed across, right across, and was flowing through a hole in the mountainside. It was really, really amazing.
So the enemy had dammed it.
The enemy had dammed it across, that we couldn't get any water, and there it was pouring itself through this hole in the mountainside, what they call a disappearing river, I suppose. Really amazing.
You said that you actually saw action on this second trip to the frontier. Can you tell me about some of the action you saw?
Oh well. We had to go out and take this hill. Well, we couldn't see. We were being fired on from the top. We couldn't see anybody. We couldn't make out where the bullets were coming from. But we were chasing along, and a bullet missed me by a fraction. I heard it hit a bush, but it hit a fellow about three behind me, a man named White, fellow Private White, and he was hit in the stomach. Well, almost immediately, there was four stretcher bearers round him. But strange to relate, another bullet came between them, went between them and hit him again in the stomach. And, of course, that was the finish. But the funny part was, he had been in the prison at Ferozepore before we left, and they released him to come up with us. And that's what happened. Lost his life over it. But... We couldn't find this fellow, but there was a tremendous bang in front of us, about 25 yards in front of us, that made us jump, and it was the mountain battery about half a mile down the riverbed had fired in front of us, a shell, and that silenced him. So they, out of the diggings, they could, they must have got tremendous binoculars, you know, to be able to pick out. We couldn't see anybody at all. We'd just been fired on, but couldn't see anybody. And this, as I say, this mountain battery fired about half a mile from down the riverbed, and this shell exploded about 25 yards ahead of us.
What was the reaction of the troops in your unit when somebody in the unit got hit in that way?
Well, it was very, very depressing of an evening, because, I mean, when everything had simmered down a bit and you've got the burial business, it was, miserable, really. It was, you get the the last post played, and it echoes all around the hillside, and as I say, it's very depressing. They, of course, they bury them in a blanket, and with no mound of any sort to indicate where the body is, because the tribesmen, if they find where they're buried, they just add them up and pinch the blankets, which to them are invaluable. But I could always see just one spot where this white was buried. It was under a tree on a hillside, and I can still see it to this day. You know, stand it in your memory. Very sad.
How were the enemy's dead disposed of?
Well, a funny thing, you see, they both sides make every effort to retrieve dead and wounded. And the only time that I ever saw any of their dead was when the mounted battery had been shelling one of the hills. And there, I think, there was, there must have been about 60 dead. But that was the only time I ever really saw any of the tribesmen, except when we were supposed to retire at one time, and we saw one of our fellows one of the Gurkhas. He hadn't got the retire, evidently hadn't heard the retire, and he was stabbed in the back by one of these hillmen. That's about the only time I ever saw one of them. But we revenged him by, we simply, about 30 of us fired a rifle at him, and that was that. So he didn't get away, but that was about the only time I ever saw one of the hillmen at all, except that there was one instance when they were walking, there was about half a dozen of them walking along the skyline about a mile away, and the mounted battery, I suppose they got their dismounted, got their guns and fired in about a couple of minutes, and they put a shell over the top of them, and they just disappeared. And that was about a mile away. But
did you have to bury the enemy dead as well?
Oh no, we didn't touch them. No, we just retired and left everything, you know, to them. Jandoda was the our base camp at the time, and but before that, we were ordered to go out and cut some bushes down because it took away our line of fire, and I got a blister on my hand, and
through using the knife,
using a I don't know what it was, a pickaxe or something of that sort, and that festered up, and a couple of days I went to the doctor, and he said I can't touch it, he said I can't do anything until it gets a head to us, you see. So I said righto, leave it, and then the next day there was a head to it, and he said I can't touch it now, he said all my instruments are packed up and on the pony and they're away. So of course that day was terrible for me because I couldn't use my rifle, and it was about our worst day of any of it, about our worst day of fighting, and I just had to follow the fellas out and carry my rifle. And when we got back that night, I went to him and he lanced it, and of course I fainted, and I wish I hadn't come round. But as I say, the poison went up beyond the elbow then, and he said, because he could see it was a bit serious, so he said, you have to go down to the hospital convoy in the morning. So that suited me.
And so you were taken out down the pass again.
Yes, taken back.
How were you conveyed?
Well, we went by camel. They put on, it takes two people, there's all what they call a kajabas. It's like a bed arrangement on each side, with a side bed a foot high, and with a canopy over the top to keep the sun off you. And that was really, camels and ponies were the only things you could use up there, you see. And we jogged along all day, this one day, until we got to Jandoda Fort. And I said to the doctor there, I said, I've had enough of this. I said, can I have a pony? Because I said, this is murder. I mean, first I'm on my head, then I'm on my feet, and it's all sideways, you know, and it's banging about. And he looked at me and laughed. He said, well, he said, you've got your right arm in a sling, and you've got your left hand bandaged up with front of your sword. He said, who do you think you're going to ride a horse? So I said, oh, I said, I'll manage. And so he said, oh, all right. He said, you'll have a pony tomorrow then. So I this pony. But I nearly got washed away in the river. It was a jolly good job. The animal could swim, and I could just hold on the saddle. It was really amazing. But as I say, the river had swelled because we'd broken down the well, their wells, as we advanced. And of course we destroyed their villages. And we cut down their mulberry trees, which was rather valuable to them.
What was the idea of that? Why were you destroying the villages and so on? Were you told why you were doing it?
Well, it was in payment for the whatever they'd been doing to the south. You know, they'd come into India and stolen stuff and all the rest of it. I don't know exactly why we were up there, really. We were never told exactly what had happened previously to make us have to go up there. And as I say, but I got this pony, and we were, I think it was two of us side by side walking, going along. I don't think either of us said a word to each other as we went along. And then all of a sudden we heard a clatter behind us. We looked round, and there was one of the lances on horseback, you know, and that was escorting the hospital convoy down. And he says, ah, oh, Sam, up, pointed up the back, and we were about a mile ahead of everybody else, because the ponies could get along much quicker than the camels, you see. And so we had to, of course, I mean, it was still no man's land, I mean, it was still enemy country, so we had to wait until the rest of the convoy picked us up. And we eventually, I don't know how many days that was. We took, must have been about 3 days, actually, I think, travelling by camel and pony until we got the tank. And we put in hospital there, and it was a treat to to lay on a real bed, I'm going to tell you. And the a sister there said, get into, you know, point the bed to get into. And she came along with a bowl of hot iodine. And she said, put your hand in that. And I put my hand in, and you know, almost at once, all the pus spiraled out through the pores of my hand. It was really amazing.
Did it take the pain away?
Yes, oh yes. But not straight away. I mean, it had to be done two or three times, you see, to get the... because, I mean, the poison was right up that part of the elbow, and it took several days to get that down, but eventually we got it down. And then we were taken to Rawalpindi. We went by train, and we crossed the Indus on the paddle steamers across to Mary Indus, which was the wide gauge railway first railway into India, first station into India. And from there we travelled down to Rawalpindi.
So how long had you been in the frontier area on that second?
Oh, I've been up there for 2 months. But the battalion itself, they had to stay there for another. They were up there for another month after that.
Did you see them come back?
No, not until, you see, at Rawalpindi, there was the hospital there. Well, from the hospital there, we went convalescence to Toper and Upper Toper, around the Murray Hills, and we went up by lorry, and after we'd been up there some time, the rest of the battalion, about 300 of them, came back up there to us, and they'd all got malaria and yellow jaundice. I never saw such a sight in my life. And we'd left Ferozepore about 900 strong, and this 300 meant that we'd left a good many behind. Some died of fever and some killed, and others in hospital all down the country, all over the country. So not so good.
Can you tell me something about the type of ammunition which the enemy used whilst you were on the frontier?
Well, as a matter of fact, they used a lot of our ammunition, which they'd stolen. Because I know we were on outpost one day, and we knew that the enemy was on a hill opposite. Well, that was about 1,000 yards away. And we were cramped, you know. It's only on outpost duty, you've only got this small circular wall. And you got so cramped that you didn't dare stand up or anything, otherwise you'd get shot at. But two fellas did stand up. And this fella fired from 1,000 yards away, and he hit two fellas with one bullet. He went through the arm of one and through the leg of the other one behind him. And that was 1,000 yards away. So it proved that they were using English ammunition. And they used to, when we fired back at them, they used to stand up and wave the flags, you know, as they do at the butts, when, you know, an outer. Much as say that's not centred. That's an outer. Yeah, they'd been in the Indian Army, you know, they'd have been that. But some of their ammunition was homemade. And I remember one fellow that I saw in hospital, and he said he got hit by one of these. And he said he thought it was a brick that had hit him. And he said he just spun round and his rifle flew away. He caught it right between the top of the arm. Made a proper mess of him. Because it was just a lump of lead, you see.
Was it a soft-nosed bullet?
Yes, a soft nose. But how they made the...
You've got one of them there.
Yes, I've got one here.
You brought
back. Yeah, that's right. It's just a lump of lead, you see.
Mm. It's about an inch long, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, at the back end of the bullet, it looks as though it's bevelled.
Yes.
They must have had some kind of mud, mustn't
they? Oh, yes, a sort of a dum-dum, you see. Well, this one hadn't been fired, as you can see.
And this is lead, is it?
That's lead, yes.
It's pretty heavy, really.
Yes, there's no cordite or anything in it, you see, to take note, so it's not dangerous. But at the same time, it hasn't been fired.
It's about a quarter of an inch across, isn't
yeah.
it? Something like that.
Yeah.
How much do you think that would weigh? How many ounces?
Oh, but a couple of ounces, I should think.
Probably more, maybe.
Yeah.
And so this other bullet that you mentioned that hit the two men, you retrieved that bullet and you found it was an English
Army
bullet.
Oh, no, we didn't retrieve it. Oh. No, it was just...
Well, how did you know it was an English Army bullet?
Well, because this bullet wouldn't travel that distance.
I see.
You see, this homemade bullet wouldn't travel that distance.
How far would that travel?
1,000 yards is a long way, but that wouldn't travel a thousand yards.
How far would that lead one travel?
Might travel 100 yards.
Hmm.
That's a bit all.
Yeah. Can you tell me also about the sniping you had to stand up to a lot of sniping? Can you tell me about any other casualties which you took through that sniping?
Well, you mean on the frontier itself?
Yeah, on the frontier.
Well, we had two night attacks, but of course we put the searchlights out, and we found these Oh, there was one because all the convenience of the Vauxhall was always outside the camp, outside the wall. And when you went there, of course, you left your ammunition and rifle and all the rest of it behind. And I went over one night, and this officer said to me, he says, hurry up. He says, I believe there's going to be some trouble at night. And there was, because I had been over there a couple of minutes before a shot was fired. And evidently a signal for the rest of the tribesmen to fire at us, you see. Well, I picked up quick and threw myself over the wall. And, of course, that was a signal for the others to fire. If they'd have fired straight away, I wouldn't have been here now, I might tell you.
So they were actually rushing the camp then?
Oh, yes.
Could you see them rushing it?
No, I couldn't because I'd come over the top and I hadn't got my rifle or anything and I just kept my head down flat on the ground. But they said, they put the searchlight on, they said that they were quite close to the camp, but they'd never get beyond a line of fire like that. I mean, there was a Gurkha who'd got a machine gun there and when it was over, we had to put him off it to stop him from firing.
Why was that?
He probably got the wind up. He's amazing. But I think we had about three night attacks like that, but of course it didn't mean anything. They didn't mean anything, but there was one instance where we got held up, I remember, and we had to make this wall sooner than we expected, and right not far away was a hill which overlooked us, and the enemy was on there, and of course he was able to fire straight down onto us that night, but they sent out some troops, the Gurkha troops, they sent them out to try and dislodge them off this hill so they shouldn't fire it, you see. And they put the searchlight on the hill. It was quite a sight, really, to put the searchlight on the hill to pick up the enemy so they could fire at them, you see. Well, this was going all pretty well all... Well, it was going all night. It was bombs and